Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for November 13th, 2022. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and this is Wrestling Night in America. You can reach us one of two ways. You can email us, WNIALivecast@gmail.com. Or you can call us up if you're listening live, 515-605-9345. You can either call us up and just listen on the line, or you can press 1, show up in our queue, and I'll put you on air to ask us a question. And yes, I did say us, because tonight I'm being joined by PWTorch.com contributor Patrick Moynihan to talk about AEW Full Gear, and he is a specialist on the AEW side of the Torch. Patrick, thanks for being with me again tonight.
Hey, Greg, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Absolutely. As I said, we'll preview Full Gear. We will also look at Impact Overdrive, which takes place next Friday. So Full Gear is on Saturday. Overdrive is on Friday. That's an Impact Plus special event. If you watch either of those two shows, I encourage you to join us next Saturday night after Full Gear goes off the air. We'll be going live with your reaction to that show and to Impact Overdrive next Saturday night, November 19th. PWTorchDailyCast.com. Send in your emails. Hang on the line to call. It's going to be a big show for AEW, and we're excited to be bringing you Wrestling Night in America after Full Gear goes off the air. So we've also got a few email questions, a follow-up on Crown Jewel last weekend. I think Zach Haydorn for filling in for me last Sunday night while I was out of town. And we've also got a question on the upcoming Survivor Series show, and specifically as it relates to War Games, which Triple H is bringing to the main roster for Survivor Series. But first, I want to go to the phones with our first call of the evening. Is the 814 area code. This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What's your first question for us tonight?
Okay, my first question is based on my experience at Monday Night Raw on Monday. I noticed the WrestleMania truck had Bobby Lashley and Charlotte Flair on it. Have you heard of any like major plans for them at WrestleMania? Because it seems odd they would be the ones on the truck and not like Roman Reigns or Ronda Rousey on the truck.
The truck is a pretty good indicator, Patrick, of who WWE plans on pushing or who the big stars of the brand are. It could be just for purposes of getting African-American representation on there to have Lashley and a female representation to have Charlotte Flair. But, you know, it is curious that of all the women on the roster, Charlotte Flair, the one who has not been on TV in some time, has made the truck, you know. But I think whenever Charlotte does come back, and it should be probably any time now as we get closer to building for WrestleMania, I think whatever she comes back to do, and I think most suspect it will be something involving Ronda Rousey, she will likely play a big part. It's hard to see Charlotte coming back and not being portrayed as a big star or the biggest star on the brand. With Lashley, you know, with the Raw and SmackDown titles, the WWE title and Universal title now combined basically into one person, that being Roman Reigns, and that one person not appearing every week, Raw needs a big star, and so far Lashley has been portrayed as a relatively big star. You know, he got a key Brock Lesnar match at Crown Jewel. They don't give those matches away, right? So, you know, you could kind of make the argument for these two both being on the truck. I think you could make the argument equally so for, as Ryan said, Roman Reigns and others being on the truck. Maybe they're on other trucks, who knows? But do you find anything curious about Lashley and Charlotte being on one of the production trucks at Raw?
Yeah, no, all good points, Greg. I think a lot of what you said as far as representation really made it kind of piqued my interest too, or kind of came to mind as well. I think Charlotte makes the most sense out of the two of them, and I agree. I mean, no matter if she's on or off TV, as she has been off for a while, I mean, I think she's clearly someone that they have always seen as the top star of that division, whether the fans have agreed or not. So when she does come back, she'll certainly be used and pushed that way. I think Ryan's point initially is really who's missing, who's not represented is the more interesting thing. And I would agree. I mean, I think the last thing you said, Greg, as far as there probably being many trucks out there on the roads for the company. And I'm sure they also do, you know, constantly update these as well. So I wouldn't read too much into it, but I think your points stand pretty well as far as who they think, you know, they always thought Charlotte is on top here. And I think it's actually kind of a positive to see someone like Lashley. I know he's been in the company on and off for a number of years at this point, but he's certainly, in this run, he's been certainly pushed to the top tier, I'd say, which is a great sign over the last 5 or so years for him.
I kind of feel like Wade, when he dissects the new openings for Raw and SmackDown, and he always, you know, in his reports, he always notes who's in there and who's not, try to read into, like, who's in good with creative and who's, you know, how do you interpret who is in the opening versus who's left out? And I feel like that's kind of what we're doing here, trying to discern what it means that someone's on the production truck and someone maybe isn't. Ryan, back to you for your second question.
Second question is on what was supposed to be the advertised dark match, because I got an email about it. It was supposed to be Matt Riddle against Bobby Lashley against Seth Rollins in that triple threat match. But the match never happened. You think that was just because of the storyline they were doing on Raw where Seth Rollins was really beat down and just barely beat Austin Theory? It wouldn't make a lot of sense for him then to beat Riddle and Lashley in a title match if he was, like, say, worn down and make him, like, look really weak. Or do you think it was just because of the low attendance that maybe they didn't think it was necessary because it was under 5,000 people, or you think some other reason they might have canceled that match?
Yeah, probably none of the above. We've seen over the years that WWE does not really care whether or not they advertise, whether they actually give fans the advertised dark matches. That's not really a concern. I think their philosophy seems to be, as long as we present these wrestlers on the show, it counts. And, you know, for some fans, maybe that does. Maybe that's all they need. Maybe they don't care necessarily about this particular match as opposed to just seeing the stars. But there are people who probably went hoping to see that particular match. And sometimes, yes, those dark matches are advertised far enough ahead before creative is written, before the show is written. So as Ryan said, if you have something on the show written that goes against perhaps what is scheduled for the dark match, they're always going to err on the side of doing what's best for creative and not necessarily worrying about delivering a dark match, even though it's advertised. So this is kind of par for the course, Patrick, for how WWE has done it for years. And I think it's probably a smattering of all of those things.
I would agree. I mean, I haven't been to a WWE show in a number of years at this point, but I know this is something that, to your point, has been going on for some time. It's not new. The first thing popped into my head as well was, again, to your point earlier, if these individuals are going to be at the show in some form, whether it's the dark match promoted or not, I think that's good enough for them, being WWE. So I don't think in their mind they're, you know, pulling back anything they promised to the fans. I think it's one, these people will be there, and two, you know, can we get you in the door as a ticket buyer? And that's kind of their MO there.
And Ryan, your third question for us.
Yeah, final question is, I had a lot of trouble getting into Monday Night Raw, getting my ticket, because it's like a by phone only. And I know very little about operating a cell phone, and I think the lady just gave me a ticket just because I was holding up the line. Have you ever heard of anyone having issues getting into WWE shows based on this phone ticket that you're sometimes required at these venues, or am I the only one that this has happened to?
You're probably not the only one this has happened to, Ryan, but you're the only one who I've heard this happen to. And more these places are going to electronic tickets, and that's not just for WWE, that's for concerts and things like that. I mean, a lot of them don't do the actual ticket, physical ticket anymore, and as much as some collectors like to have those tickets for those events, it's just, I think, a lot easier to email it to you and have you pull it up on your phone. Now, there are probably quite a few people of a different generation, or maybe like Ryan, who are not glued to their cell phone 24/7 like the rest of us are, and it may not be as easy to use. And hopefully, I don't know, but hopefully there is a remedy for that. Hopefully there is an exception made for that. But I think Patrick, most places are basically going to the paperless tickets these days.
Yeah, I've been to a number of shows recently, AEW included, New Japan, a few independent shows here in my region being Philadelphia. And yeah, I mean, all of them are really moved to that mobile ticket experience. So knock on wood, haven't had issues yet, but I'm from that old school too. That physical ticket is something that I'm always more reliant on. And I'm waiting for the day, inevitably, that like you, Ryan, I've had I'm going to have an issue with my mobile ticket experience. But yeah, it's been something that the last number of years has been the de facto choice for all outlets.
All right, Ryan, thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks for taking it. Didn't help that I forgot my phone number because I got nervous with all those people in back of me.
Yeah, that probably didn't help either. I think there's got to be a way if – for whatever reason, something happens, you accidentally deleted the email or something like that, there's got to be a way for them to track that you bought the ticket, whether it's by phone number, whether it's by, you know, email receipt or whatever like that, that they have on file that they can, there's got to be a system where that is easily traceable so that if you did buy a ticket and for whatever reason you don't have it on your phone, that that they can find it for you, right?
Yeah, and I'll just jump in. My experience, I think that's really the fallback. I mean, save it in email if you can, in addition to whatever the mobile app you have is for the ticket reader. But yeah, having that email proof is really key.
Yeah, I keep the email because they give you like three emails. They give you the email with the ticket, they'll give you the email receipt, the confirmation, all that stuff. So,
right,
I mean, even if you delete one, you probably have another there that you can use as sort of proof. But now I want to move into talking about Full Gear again next Saturday night from the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey. And this brings me to an email. It's not so much a question, but an email from Zach from Texas. I thought this was a good email to sort of start things off on in terms of our Full Gear discussion. He says, "Gentlemen, I'm always excited for AEW pay-per-views, but objectively, this is a really strong card. The main event feels like a really big deal, and Tony Khan deserves credit for being able to adapt and navigate through having to turn MJF face. There doesn't feel like there's any lingering doubt about his alignment. It just feels like a potential WrestleMania 14 moment for MJF, complete with JR yelling, 'The MJF era has begun.' There are three strong women's matches on the card. Sting is on the card so he can jump off something high and no sell a guitar shot. We're probably going to get the Elite versus Death Triangle, which will be the best kind of chaos. There's a steel cage match that feels like it has reason to be a steel cage match, which is a nice change of pace. The only wonky match is the ROH title four-way, which feels a little out of place, but will undoubtedly be a great match in the ring." So, Patrick, I know you cover AEW for the Torch. Do you get feeling from this card as Zach in Texas does?
Well, after you just read Zach's email, I'm pumped now too. the last few pay-per-views, I'll answer your question in a second, but the last few pay-per-views have felt a little underwhelming to me. Not the cards. The cards are great and strong as far as the match quality goes going in. I think the builds have been a little bit lacking for me. That said, after really just listening to you read Zach's email, I mean, he makes all great points. Most of these matches have been built very well. Having MJF theoretically walking away as the champion and to Zach's point, being dubbed the next generation or the next kind of iteration of, the AEW champ here. I mean, that's going to be a huge news item coming out of this show. And by all accounts, he should and will walk away the champion, in my opinion. I also agree with Zach's note about having three strong women's matches on here. Or at least having three women's matches, I'm sure we'll talk about it, Greg, whether they're strong or not, but I think at least two of the three going in look pretty darn good on paper. And then, throw things in like a cage match with a strong storyline build, Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy. Whether you like Jeff Jarrett or not, it's intriguing that he's on this card and in this promotion and, back against Sting. On a main stage, and then there's a few more we can talk about. But lastly, I mean, the pending return of the Elite. So while it's not official at the moment, it seems like the way they've been showing these promotions over the last few weeks, it's certainly going down that road. So, like I said, I'm not sure watching the show week to week, I've been that pumped for it. But really, as you can kind of step back a little bit and digest how they've gotten this far and the angles and the storylines and the matches that have been building to this moment, I think they've done a pretty darn good job.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, the Moxley MJF thing is going to carry it. That feels like a major pay-per-view title match. So I think there's a check mark there. The women's matches, I think, have the potential to be strong, a couple of them anyway. The Luchasaurus Jungle Boy Jack Perry match being a cage match, I think stands out to me because that's the only stipulation match thus far. There is an episode of Dynamite and Rampage to go between now and then. So other matches could be added, other stipulations could be added to these matches. But the fact that pulled back a little on doing all kinds of stipulation matches is a good sign. And I think it's going to make Luchasaurus versus Jack Perry stand out a little more. So let's start there. Let's start with Luchasaurus versus Jack Perry as we run down match by match this card. Jack Perry is fighting from behind, and I get why AEW would portray him this way. He's sort of an underdog kind of guy. He's small in stature. He doesn't weigh a lot. He's not a very intimidating presence. Book him as an underdog. But with Christian beating him, with Luchasaurus beating him, has that damaged Jungle Boy's brand? Or do you think they are doing the right thing in booking him as a babyface to eventually make his big wins feel bigger?
Yeah, I'm going to be in the camp, the latter camp. I think really booking him stronger in the longer term. Short term, I can sense and see a little bit that, you know, it might have dinged him a little bit from the just kind of where he's been super hot in the last number of months, but more recently, maybe cooled down just a little bit. But I would argue that is more due to his lack of screen time. He hasn't been on TV a ton, really, in the last number of months between, just say, the last pay-per-view and now. But I think that's also been strategic on AEW's part, just, you know, due to this storyline. I also think the Christian injury really threw a wrinkle and wrench into this. They were lucky, really, that this Luchasaurus, built-in feud is there for them, you know, to just step into. But I don't think this is where they were immediately going to be going. Maybe at this point in the pay-per-view they would have gotten here. But, you know, we haven't seen Jungle Boy because of that Christian injury, I think. The biggest thing for me from a Jungle Boy perspective, and you actually referenced his real name a few times in the setup, but this is really the feud. If this was like the Attitude Era, this is Jungle Boy's pivot from, you know, earlier, not cartoony, but maybe a little cartoony character into more realistic. And they've really leaned to that. I'm not sure that I've heard many people speak to that yet, but in this feud, I think the one big outcome in a positive way has been the shedding of the Jungle Boy gimmick as 100% who he is versus kind of moving into the Jack Perry persona, which I think will benefit him tremendously long term.
Yeah, I agree. I think that going by Jack Perry instead of Jungle Boy is sort of a coming out party in a way for him. It shows the maturation of the character. And so often in wrestling, you kind of get stuck and you don't change as a character, especially in WWE. And the example I always use is The Miz. Miz, I mean, he's gone back and forth between babyface and heel, but he hasn't changed. Dolph Ziggler hasn't changed. You know, there's no maturation. There's no character journey that the fans go on of, you know, that has any lasting impact on that character. And I think this has the potential to be one of those moments where he really breaks out and hopefully breaks free of sort of an undercard act and uses it as a springboard to be something more. And the other thing I want to say, too, is you mentioned the Christian injury. Obviously, that probably changed some plans. But I think his mic work has been so good as a heel that it's really helped Jungle Boy as a babyface. I think Christian has just done a nice job on the mic.
Yeah, they're another thing they've not locked into really, but, you know, people weren't that psyched and stoked to see Christian and AEW in general. But the fact that they don't really have to lean on his wrestling here, kind of in a roundabout way, and to your point, really lean into his mic work as that 20-plus year professional, I mean, that's really done wonders here in this feud.
Yep. We have a match that's to be determined, and that is the World Title Eliminator Finals. AEW loves themselves a good tournament. The winner gets an AEW title shot at Winter Is Coming on the December 14th episode of Dynamite. Right now, the semifinals, Adam Page versus Bandido, and Brian Cage versus the winner of Lance Archer and Ricky Starks. Those semifinal matches will take place, I believe, this week on AEW TV, so that the finals of the tournament take place on Ethan Page. I wrote down Page, and my first instinct was to say Adam Page. I forget. You know, this is why WWE avoided people with the same last names or same first name. So
yeah. It
is Ethan Page against Bandido, my apologies, and Brian Cage versus – and I wrote Cage down too, but I knew it was Brian. I knew it wasn't Christian because he's hurt. So Brian Cage versus the winner of Lance Archer and Ricky Stark. So, I mean, what's your feel here? I mean, does it kind of depend on who wins, Jon Moxley or MJF in the main event – at Full Gear as to who you would pick to win, or do you have a good feel based on the five wrestlers who are still alive in the tournament who you think is going to come out on top?
Yeah, too many pages and cages. Vince was onto something when he was naming his stars, for good or
we
bad.
We all made fun of him. We all said it was so ridiculous and stupid, but hey, here we are.
Yeah, absolutely. Joke's on us. I think the MJF, normally an MJF Moxley match to help determine who win this tournament is something I think through. I think we'll get to that, obviously, but just the way things have been going with MJF's character, I don't know if the winner of that speaks to me as much as it would in other scenarios. So all that said, I'm dwindling it down to either Page or Starks. I think the core of my reasoning here has just been the way they've been presenting both. Starks, you know, we haven't seen him wrestle yet in the tournament, but just the fact that he's kind of down and out. He was supposed to fight on Rampage against Archer, but Archer took him out on Dynamite last week. So just the fact they're kind of putting that babyface in peril. He's been super over, although he's another example of not really getting on TV a lot lately. I do think he, you know, at least gets to the finals and could potentially win this thing. Page, on the other hand, similar. I mean, they've been pushing him pretty strongly here from the get-go. I think he was the first one to put his name in the hat here for the tournament, and he's cut a few promos here more than he's done more recently as well. So it feels like he's getting more screen time, and at least they're going to be headed to the final, I think, against one another.
It does feel like there's momentum behind Ethan Page to win, and part of it is, you know, if you're looking at winner of Moxley versus MJF and trying to read the tea leaves as to, you know, if the babyface wins, it's got to be a heel winner of the tournament. If the heel wins, it's got to be a babyface winner of the tournament, kind of that old school thinking. But then you've got MJF, who we're not sure if he's going to come out of Full Gear as a babyface or a heel. So that makes it so much more difficult to try to divine which one of these guys is going to win this tournament. I mean, you know, if I had to say, probably Ethan Page. I think the attack on Starks by Archer on TV this past week seems to indicate like, and I think people expected AEW to be behind Ricky Starks a little more than they have been lately by this point. He had some really good promos, some really good moments on AEW TV that AEW just didn't seem to capitalize on. So you mentioned him. I think that's an interesting name. And whoever wins, I don't think is going to win the title, but I think either Ethan Page or Ricky Starks, or, you know, even a Brian Cage, who was spotlighted this past week on AEW TV, I think it's going to give them some important rub by being in the match itself.
Yeah, and you mentioned Brian Cage. I'm just happy to see him back. I know he's not the best of talkers, but, you know, he's been someone that, again, been another example. I'm sure there's a few more we can talk about. As always with AEW, just kind of being incognito for some time, but they've really been able to get behind them a little bit more recently, give him some Rampage matches and maybe a Dynamite match here or two. I don't think, you know, just to, for the sake of the initial question, I don't see him progressing on the tournament, but I just like the fact that they, you know, they've actually built him back to a point at least to be a viable candidate or contender for maybe a middle title, or maybe just kind of shifting into Ring of Honor when, if and when that's kind of fully in gear. No pun intended.
So Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal, puns are always welcome here on Wrestling Night in America. Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal take on Sting and Darby Allin. You've got the connection with Jarrett and Sting from back in their WCW days. Although, you know, latter stages WCW, I'm not really sure that there's a lot of appetite for that kind of nostalgia that Tony Khan seems to be banking on, but yet here we are. Jarrett being a part of this group with Jay Lethal, with Sanjay Dutt, with Satnam Singh is an interesting addition. And, of course, you got Sting and Darby. They're going to do something crazy, I'm sure. I said that Luchasaurus and Jack Perry as the cage match is the only stipulation match, but that doesn't mean I don't envision a Jarrett classic TNA walk-in brawl that he was known for in the main events in the early days of TNA, that happening before the match even begins. So there could be a brawl that happens before the match begins, and we see some crazy stuff, tables included. But yeah, talk a little bit about the addition of Jeff Jarrett. It's kind of out of nowhere. He's also going to be working on the business side of AEW as well. So, I mean, it seems like probably maybe not necessarily a character that's going to be there every week, but, you know, it's... I don't know how he does it, but Jeff Jarrett just keeps coming around to these places. Like, he just seems to have a decent enough relationship with everyone to make all these appearances.
Yeah, you said it right there. I mean, good for him in that regard. I'm personally still on the fence as to what to think here. I think my first thought is, you know, negative. Just from the history with Jeff Jarrett, you know, the potential to be negative here. But it really depends on what his screen time is and what his on-air role is. I understand, you know, why or what they're envisioning for his backstage role, and that sounds pretty positive and wise in general, just with the experience he brings. But yeah, I kind of, the jury's still out for me on his on-screen approach. Ironically, this is probably my favorite version of Jeff Jarrett, which just seems kind of odd since I've been watching the guy for almost 30 years. But
there's been a lot of versions.
A lot of versions, absolutely. this is maybe the most intriguing. And he's, you know, honestly, he's in great shape from the looks of it. So, I mean, he's doing his part, at least visually and verbally, I'd say, as well. So that all said, I think the outcome of this match, in my opinion, really depends on how they're going to elongate this feud. I'm kind of hoping they don't. But now that Jeff Jarrett's kind of a new wrinkle here, I think and I sense they may. If they do, I think Jeff Jarrett and Lethal kind of go, they certainly would go over here. But again, really interested to see kind of just what they're going to do after this. And I 100% agree with your point as far as just probably a lot of brawling up front.
What's your take on the Sting-Darby relationship? I've seen some people recently say that to get to the next level, Darby needs to ditch Sting. They've been together for a while. The relationship in terms of on-screen and where they're positioned is not as hot as it has been in the past, although they do like to save Sting for pay-per-view matches. So do you believe that theory, that in order to take the next step that Darby needs to ditch Sting, or is this a relationship that can work over the long term?
I'm more on the latter. I think it can work more long-term. I think the one thing that's missing, really, if you think about it, have they really told us the story of what the two of them are together for? I mean, we've kind of assumed a lot, you know, Sting being, you know, the older icon and you know, the upstart Darby kind of having a similar look or feel to the earlier Sting. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they've really told us outright that Sting is, you know, grooming Darby in a sense to be the next champion or just kind of bringing him up. That said, if and when they do break up, I would like to, you know, AEW to take a different approach and kind of an amicable, if obviously this may be silly for the world of wrestling, but, you know, I don't think Darby's going to get over as a heel unless something drastic happens with his character. And I don't think obviously Sting should be a heel at this stage either. So I can see Sting kind of saying to Darby in a sense, you know, you've reached your, you know, your potential and you're on your own now in that regard. So maybe that's the way they bring it. That sounds pretty boring the way I just described it. But I guess my point is, you know, just kind of a way to say, you know, here's the baton, go run with it in that sense.
It's way too mature for the world of professional wrestling to have a relationship end so amicably.
It certainly is. So I'm not going to be booking anytime soon.
I totally agree with you. I think that this Sting-Darby relationship can continue to work with, you know, I think it's a unique relationship in that Darby is this sort of man-child who has never grown out of a certain state of mind, I think. And Sting is that veteran presence that says, hey, I've been there. I want to be here to lead you and to help you. And that's all it really needs to be. Like, it, you know, I think that that can work. In fact, I think that can be explored even more if Darby Allin, or if there are intentions to push Darby Allin as a main event guy at some point in the future. I think that relationship and that mentorship can be explored more once he gets more TV time and once he gets on a bigger stage and a bigger storyline. So I'm all for that. I think it can work higher up on the card even. I don't think he needs to ditch Sting to take that next step, so to speak, in his AEW career. We've reached the bottom of the hour here. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. I'm joined by PWTorch.com contributor Patrick Moynihan, and we are discussing AEW Full Gear, which comes this Saturday from the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey. And we will be on the air here on Wrestling Night in America after Full Gear goes off the air. So make sure to tune in then. Call us up, 515-605-9345. Send us an email with your thoughts on Full Gear at NIALivecast@gmail.com, and we'll have a lot of fun discussing the show after it goes off the air. But right now we're discussing it before it goes on the air, and we go to our next phone call, the 615 area code. It's Sean from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Greg, it's glad to be on, glad to have you back. I know Zach did well, even though I didn't get a chance to really hear a lot of it, but I know he did a fantastic job. But I didn't miss you being on here. And yeah, I know he does. And Patrick, I think it's the first time I've ever actually talked to you. I know I've heard you a lot and heard you with Alex and stuff, but it's the first time getting on with you, man. How are you?
Hey, Sean, thanks so much. Appreciate you listening. Yeah, I'm doing well. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first I had to say, I always bring up the football thing real quick when I get on here, but my Packers might have maybe saved their season. They finally got a win against the Cowboys, which they really desperately needed. So thank God for that. They came back and keep trucking, man. They're they're trying. What can you say? They're trying. I don't have anything else at this point for you.
they're keeping the games close, even though it feels like deja vu every week, which is a big step over being uncompetitive every week. And the other way to look at it is they've won as many games this year as they won the last 2 years combined. So, you know, there's something to say for that, too.
That's true. But, no, I wanted to bring up, a few things. First wanted to ask, just going back, because I wanted to bring up the Eliminator Tournament, if you guys, hadn't have already brought it up, which is fine. I definitely think Starks, I think he hasn't been on TV, lately just to kind of, I think, maybe get fans kind of back behind him again even more. Because, I didn't really know him before he came, on AEW television. I kind of used you guys and a lot of people to kind of hear about how good he was, on the mic and all those kinds of things. And so now that I've seen him, obviously in AEW for a while, I really do like him. I think he's good in the ring and obviously really good on the microphone. And I hope he does win because I think they need to build him back up. I think they need to do something big with him. I think this is kind of a way to do it. Do you guys agree with that? Would this be the best thing for Starks at this point to win that tournament? Because I think there's nowhere to go but up, and I think they should use him well while they have him in a good spot like they do.
Sure. I think that, like I said, Starks and Ethan Page, I think, and it may depend on the opponent. I think Ricky Starks makes a little more sense for MJF. Jon Moxley and Ethan Page, I feel like, match up a little better together. So part of it does, I think, depend on who wins the AEW championship at Full Gear, who walks out as the AEW champion that night. But, we kind of talked about, Patrick, how felt like AEW missed their opportunity with Ricky Starks just when he was getting hot. This is an opportunity to perhaps heat him up again. But do you feel like they missed their opportunity? Do you think that they'll be able to get fans to care about him in the same way that fans appeared to care about him over a couple weeks there a few months ago?
Yeah, I do. I think they can. I think that they I'm dumbfounded, really, watching AEW with the booking decisions they have. Really comes down to why they're not using certain people more than kind of how they're using certain people. But this is an example of the how. To your point, both of you, I'm not really sure, you know, the how or why he's not been on TV lately is really dumbfounding. But I do think this could be the chance to kind of just get him right back into the mix. That's why I had him, you know, him or Paige coming out of this. I do think that I think one of the reasons this tournament's happening at all is really just to light some fire under some folks that, you know, really haven't had that chance. And the last four or five guys, really, even Archer included. Bandido was kind of new, so I'm not sure if I would include him in that. But even Archer in there and Cage are guys that have just not really been under the radar in the last year or so. So I think this is a way to revive some of these characters, and I think Starks is definitely on the top of that list.
Sean, back to you for your second question for us.
Yeah, so I definitely did want to, you know, go right into the MJF Moxley. I know you guys will talk about it later, and, you know, I don't want to take away from that in any means. But the build has been, you know, really good. I mean, I do agree with you guys. I think the build's been really, really good. I guess the thing is, I guess my issue with the match, in a sense of, I'm okay where they go, because I think there's good to go either way. Obviously, MJF's super hot. You know, if you do turn him face and he does officially go face, which I'm still very worried, guys, that he's not going face. I know everything points to that. Yeah, and I hope they do, because it's the smart thing to do, but I don't – but again, he's a good, great heel, fantastic heel, one of the best in the business. But I think the fans are cheering him, and you have to go that route. But at the same time, my other issue with this whole thing is – the way they did the Moxley Punk back and forth, I've never been a fan of titles going back and forth. And I don't think Moxley, of course, needs the title, because he's such a big star. It doesn't really matter. He'll sell every match that he'll be in either way, because, you know, he's just great in that role either way. But I don't want him to lose the title right now, because I think he's got so many good matches he could have as the champion, and to build that title up. And talk about, like Wade always talks about, how much it means to him being the champion, how much he loves this business and all this kind of stuff. I really think they're losing something if they have MJF win this match, even if he does stay face, you know, go face in that way. So what have you thought about everything with the build? And who, if you had to put a nickel on it, let's say, you know, who do you think will go over in this match? Because I think it's you could go either way with it.
Boy, I like the build-up. I thought that the interview that MJF did that they aired on Dynamite this past week, the podcast interview when he was on, I don't know if it was Pardon My Take or that satellite of podcast that he was on, I thought it was a really strong promo. I thought that was a very good, well-done promo and video package. I think the one thing that we haven't talked about yet, and of course we haven't gotten to the match yet, you know, proper to preview it, is the role that William Regal may play in this match. He has been an integral part of the storyline so far, as, you know, being a mentor to Jon Moxley and being the leader of the Blackpool Combat Club, but also having a history with MJF, as MJF laid out very finely on Dynamite several weeks ago. And there is a school of thought that MJF may turn on Moxley and help MJF win. Obviously, if that were the case, MJF would likely stay heel.
Mm-hmm.
I struggle to envision a scenario where MJF wins is seen as a babyface. I think his babyface story, and maybe I'm old-fashioned, but like his babyface story I could only see happening if he loses. And then, like, there is a, you know, realization that he needs to change. And maybe I'm too old school. Maybe his attitude and the way he talks and the way he acts, maybe that's what got him over as a babyface, and maybe that's just the way he has to be. Even though that, for most people, that would be a heel. The fans are turning him babyface. So maybe a win is what I don't know. We could do a whole podcast on this match, I feel like. I mean, there's so many layers to it with the Regal involvement, with the MJF babyface heel, with the titles having gone back and forth with Moxley and Punk and things like that. Sean, I don't know what part of that you want to – what thread that you want to pull there from what I talked about and what Sean talked about, Patrick, but pull on one of those threads and talk a little bit about that match.
Yeah, this is a good one to talk about, like you said, because I think it's confusing the heck out of me. I don't know going in. I mean, if to your point, Sean, you're asking me who you think is going to win. I think the way they've booked this, MJF has to come away the winner. I chimed in earlier when you were posing the question because I'm really scared if they swerve us. Because it is going back to late-stage WCW, and nobody wants to do that. I think they've built up too much credibility with MJF as a potential face here. He's kind of on the walking the line. That I think if they pulled that back, I think I don't know if it would be MJF, you're a really good heel type of heat. I think it would be more of an AEW, why did you do that to us type of heat, and that's not a good thing. I think they have to pull the trigger here with MJF. That said, I'm just so confused as a viewer and a longtime wrestling fan because you don't really see this much that often. It's pretty clear cut when turns like this happen. So this has been lingering for some time. Even the shove from MJF to Tony Schiavone was a right on, full out heel thing. So the fact that just happened not too long ago, and now we're pivoting to this, and even the last pay-per-view, the way he won the chip to become number one contender, just like full on heel stuff. And all of a sudden we're turning to babyface and it's working. But I'm just curious where they go here. And I'm just concerned that they don't pull the trigger and make him a full-time face here. The way it's been trending. So, I don't know. I think that all said, and I think this is something we haven't really mentioned yet, but AEW has done a really darn good job with their main event title matches in the last year as far as pay-per-views go. There's been a lot of big feuds. This is one of the bigger ones, booked really well, and I think it's certainly capable of carrying the strong card. So I'm just giving props and kudos to that as well.
It did feel like the shove to Tony Schiavone was the last gasp desperation attempt by AEW to keep him a heel. And then when that didn't work, it was like then they started transitioning. They had, the attack by Stokely Hathaway's group that put him on the shelf for a few weeks. Obviously that was – he took a babyface beating there. Unless it's revealed that was all a ruse by MJF and he did that to – again, there's so many layers here. You involve Regal. You involve Stokely Hathaway in that group. And there's just so many threads to pull when it comes to this that it's just so hard to say. Sean, I'll go back to you for your final question for us tonight.
Yeah, going back to – and I wanted to bring up Zach in Texas because I give him a hard time. We get on the YouTube channel and talk with Zach and Tyler, pretty much all the time. And, Zach's one of those guys I make fun of him because, he loves everything AEW does. Like, everything they do, he just loves it. And sometimes I don't really like that because I'm just like, dude, I'm a WWE fan. I know, Patrick, you don't watch it, and that's fine. I respect that. I totally get that. But, there's things WWE does that I can't stand, and I watch it all the time. There's things there's things AEW does that I can't stand. And the women's stuff that they've done, I don't like a lot of it, honestly, to be really honest with you. And I'm not trying to be mean to them. I just think they've done a really bad job. When the Saraya Britt match is bigger than your title match, I don't like it. And I wanted to bring up the Tony Jamie stuff especially, but really all three matches. With Tony and Jamie, it's like Tony, you can say part of it's on her that she's not coming across maybe as great as she could. But they've just booked her really, really badly. Yes, she has the title, but it doesn't mean anything really with her having the title at this point. Like, there's just not a lot of firepower behind her. And you've got Jamie against her, which, I like Jamie Hayter. I'm not as big of a fan as a lot of the fans are that just love her. And yeah, I mean, I think she's good, but I don't think she's that amazing. And I think they're going to feel like they need to put the title on Jamie, which I guess is good in the sense of, the fans are behind her. Let's give her the title and build to something maybe with her and Britt here in the future, because I think they'll end up going that route, which could be good. But I just think Tony's been booked very badly. And, you know, with Jay and Nyla, I think their storyline absolutely sucks. I think it's stupid. So I just think they've done a bad job booking. So, but go to the Jamie and Tony match especially, and kind of what you think they're going to go there, because I just think it's been booked, you know, very badly. I think Tony's been just not looked good as a champion, and kind of where do you think they've gone with the women's division as a whole. And that's all I had, Greg. I appreciate you, man. You do a great job. Patrick, always good to, you know, talk to you, man. I hope I can talk to you again soon. And thanks for taking my call, as always.
Yeah, thank you, Sean. Appreciate it. You know, let's jump right into the women's matches then, because I think that's a good springboard for us to get back into the card here. Britt Baker versus Saraya, you know, I understand 99% of the time that you don't want the undercard matches dwarfing your title match. But I think with Saraya's in-ring return, I think this is kind of an exception. And Dr. Britt Baker has been, you know, the biggest star of AEW for a while as far as the women's division. Maybe not so much now. I think it's a little more evened out. So I think there's good reason that Britt Baker versus Saraya feels, at least to Sean, like a bigger match than Toni Storm versus Jamie Hayter. So I think it's one of those exceptions. That being said, I'm struggling to figure out what Saraya is trying to be, because she's had a couple moments on the mic that have just flopped and have not, I don't think, gotten her to where she wants to be as a character. So I think this is going to be a match that, unfortunately, some people are kind of holding their breath, as you do when someone who had to retire due to injury all of a sudden gets magically cleared and you just want them to be okay. And, you know, I think we've gotten to the point where for guys like Bryan Danielson and Edge, we may have been doing that the first couple matches. We don't do that anymore. But for Saraya, I think there's going to be some of that on social media this night. But what do you make of how Saraya has been portrayed, how she's portrayed herself? And is this the exception that a match like this, it's okay in this instance for it to feel bigger than the title match?
Yeah, I'm nodding along as you're asking me that question, because I think it is. I think this is that exception. Baker has, as you well put, she's really been the star of this division, not from day one, but pretty close since day one. So I think having her in this role, and then obviously Saraya being such a star from her years in WWE, I think it's just naturally bigger than what else is on the card from the women's division perspective. That said, I was in Philadelphia for the Dynamite that Saraya came out and kind of talked about the division, and being there in person, still not really sure what she was trying to do there. I think she's kind of rebounded a little bit, not this past week, but the week prior. They did a sit-down pre-produced interview with her and Tony Schiavone. I thought that was probably the better route to take with her, at least just to kind of resettle her a little bit from a character perspective. And then, of course, the Baker-Saraya showdown in the ring on last week's Dynamite. I thought it was okay, a little jarring here and there, but I think it got the point across to build this match. I guess to get to your core of your question again, I'm not really sure where they're going here. I'd like to think that she can get over, be safe in the ring, and really make an impact here for this division. But so far, it's just kind of been underwhelming, I think. Not to go off on kind of down a different path here, but I think that's kind of unfortunately what the Tony Khan booking of WWE stars has been in general, just kind of underwhelming and hasn't really been able to grasp their star power enough to make them mean too much here in this promotion. And that's, Saraya is just a perfect example of that. Again, early days, but so far that's kind of where, you know, where she's falling.
And then Jade Cargill versus Nyla Rose, TBS title. It does feel like Nyla Rose is one of the more upper echelon opponents for Jade Cargill in terms of actually being a threat to Jade Cargill's title. Not physically, because Nyla Rose has already been a threat to that title physically. She's literally taken it from Jade Cargill. I think there is a sense that, ooh, she actually could lose the title to a Nyla Rose, where you haven't really necessarily felt that in some of Jade Cargill's recent matches. I just feel like the character presentation has been kind of off. Nyla Rose is just so funny on Twitter, and she's so good when she's given the opportunity on screen, and I don't feel like they're exploring that enough, and I feel like the old hackneyed stealing the title is so below both of these women, that sort of storyline. It does put Jade Cargill a little bit on her heels in terms of, you know, she's always going into these matches with the advantage, confidence advantage, everything like that. I think this causes her to take a step back a little bit, which is interesting to see in terms of character development. But I think the storyline has not been where I think it should be, considering the talent involved. And it's curious that it almost feels like they're teasing a Jade Cargill babyface turn here, as Nyla Rose has been acting a little bit like a heel. So, you know, another one, I'm just throwing it out there, not necessarily going to happen, but something to think about.
Yeah, it's clearly, if you're going to pick a face in this feud, Jade Cargill is the choice, although she's really not playing it up to the full degree of as someone like we talked about MJF earlier. So that's kind of confusing as a viewer. I think you hit a really good point as far as Nyla Rose's character. She's kind of, you know, bear with me with this parallel scenario, but she's kind of the Jungle Boy in this feud, where she's starting to come out of that predefined role that she's had since day one here in AEW and really being more herself. Before I deactivated my Twitter, I followed her, and she was absolutely hilarious. Very, very funny individual. So if they can kind of get that out of her and make that pop on screen, I think that's good in the long run. But back to this feud, I think the biggest thing hindering this is what you said as far as just the title being stolen. And if you're going to go down that road, make it happen a week or two before the pay-per-view, not a month and a half. It feels that way anyway. And there's really no reason why Cargill doesn't have her title back yet. So that's just kind of silly, and I think it's just getting in the way of what could be a better built storyline here.
Mm-hmm. And then we'll finish out with the women's interim AEW title between Toni Storm and Jamie Hayter. I do agree that I'm a huge fan of Toni Storm. I've been less than impressed with her run as champion. I do kind of feel like that's not necessarily her fault. That just happens to people who win the women's title. I feel like they're not – it doesn't feel like a real title reign. But Jamie Hayter is an interesting opponent because she's got a lot of fans behind her wanting her to turn on Britt Baker. What's your guess? When does Jamie Hayter finally turn? Because the fans seem to be ready for it. And we've learned in wrestling that you don't want to wait too long to make that turn. Otherwise, you will have missed that key moment to get someone over big. So do you see it happening at Full Gear? Does Britt cost her the match maybe, and it happens on Dynamite? When do you see that turn happening?
Yeah, I think they had their chance with that turn not too long ago, but the two made amends, and I think they're kind of on different paths at the moment, so I don't see it happening imminently. I think you're right, though. I mean, people are still very much behind, whether she's a heel or not, Jamie Hayter. I think that's an organic build that's been just fun to watch, both on TV and like I said, when I was there in person at Dynamite. So I'm hopeful that they haven't missed the boat there. I don't think they have. I think they can ride this a little bit longer. Although if it was me, I probably would have pulled the trigger, you know, when they had the chance whether it was a week or about a month ago, at that point. I think the biggest thing getting in the way for Toni Storm back to her is, and this is me speaking, I think it's just the unknown of Thunder Rosa coming back. Inevitably, she's still the de facto champion. So I don't know if Jamie Hayter goes over here. I feel like Storm has to continue to be the champ until she can put that interim status on the line against Thunder Rosa. So until that happens, it feels like this is almost like a limbo scenario, because AEW really isn't one to hotshot title switches. So Hayter winning it, I think, would just put a wrinkle in the plans of having a Storm-Thunder Rosa showdown.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back to the phones. The 410 area code, it is Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, thanks for hanging on with us here tonight, and good to talk to you this evening.
Good to talk to you both, and good to hear you on the air tonight, Patrick, with the 90s Passcast. It's always a joy to listen to your podcast.
Thanks so much, Irvin Keith. Appreciate that.
Yes, and congratulations, Grant. I've noticed
Thank
that
you.
No one else has mentioned it. I saw the picture. I actually even shared it with my wife. And congratulations on your engagement. And I wish you two the very best and peace and prosperity and happiness.
I appreciate that, Reverend Keith. For those who don't know, I went. Well, the reason I was not here last weekend doing the show is I went on a cruise with my girlfriend and her family, and I popped the question. So we are now engaged. So she is now my fiance, which is very exciting. Looking forward to it. It's all new. It feels very awesome right now, and I hope it stays that way. But really appreciate the kind words, Reverend Keith.
Certainly, certainly. I wish you the best. Have you guys set a date yet, sir?
We are looking at next November. Our anniversary is later this month. So,
okay.
We got engaged in November. We started dating in November. So we're looking at a November wedding, perhaps. If we need to push it out to 2024, we're looking maybe February. But those are the kind of areas we're looking at now.
Okay. That year will go by quickly, and I know you're excited. So,
yeah.
Listen, I wanted to stick with the topic of the women in AEW first since it's fresh on our minds. And I do agree with Sean that the only problem I have with the way that they have promoted Full Gear is that the women's matches, both Saraya and Britt specifically, and Tony's match seemingly have stood out more from a promotional standpoint than Mox MJF. Now, it's interesting how they could take a lot of these matches, as you guys have already discussed. Now, with Toni Storm, I think they will keep the belt on her, even though it seems like it's time to transition over to Jamie Hayter. But I think what will happen is, Britt's jealousy may finally get in the way and maybe cost her this match, and then Toni will retain so that when Thunder Rosa returns, we'll have that all-anticipated matchup between the two. Because normally, if you follow the trend with AEW, normally they don't take the title off the interim champ and put it on a fresh face. They keep it on the interim till the old-school person comes back. So what are your thoughts on Toni just keeping the belt and then Thunder Rosa coming back between now and January, which I think she kind of alluded to in a recent podcast?
Well, yeah, that would sort of lend credence to the idea I threw out there about Britt Baker costing or someone from that orbit costing Jamie Hayter the match and Jamie turning on them. And that's kind of the fly in the ointment, as it is, Sean, is Thunder Rosa kind of hanging over this. She hasn't been mentioned on television. She's still the AEW Women's Champion. Toni Storm, as I mentioned, is just the interim Women's Champion. So to connect those dots, do they kind of need to wait till Thunder Rosa comes back before they switch the title to someone else because of that existing story with Toni and Thunder Rosa?
Yeah, that's how I see it. I mean, Reverend Keith is spot on as far as where I think that goes. You kind of do. I mean, I think you could – in theory, obviously, you can do whatever the heck you want, but in theory, you want to keep that interim title on the person that's holding that mantle as the champion is out for the, for whatever the time period is. And there's only been one precedent really here in AEW's with Punk and Mox, but I think that you kind of have to keep that precedent going in this regard to really, whether you unseat Thunder Rosa officially or have her reclaim that stake, when she comes back. So that's kind of how and why I'm seeing Storm coming out on this match.
Yeah, Reverend Keith, back to you for your second question for us tonight.
My second question pertains to the title eliminator match, which we do not know the finalists yet. But the way they've been setting this up, Greg, it seems like Ethan Page may come out of this the winner because they spent a lot of time focusing on he and Stokely Carmichael and all of them, or Stokely Hathaway. focusing on them challenging the winner of Mox MJF. So I could see Ethan Page coming out of it, and let's say Mox, whether Mox or MJF win the match, because technically if MJF turns babyface, which you guys have already spent a lot of time talking about that, so I won't allude to that, Ethan Page is the heel, so he could challenge him right away. So I'm looking at Ethan coming out the winner, although I think his opponent will be either Ricky Starks or Bandido. What are your thoughts on that final?
I think that Ethan Page does make sense for MJF, even though I argue that he makes more sense to face Jon Moxley because of that Stokely Hathaway connection. And that's the thing, when you get so many groups and so many trios and so many quartets as AEW has, there's always connections in so many matches that you can make, and it makes things very interesting and hard to predict. But Patrick, I mean, what do you think that is that in the equation for AEW? Everything that's happened with Stokely Hathaway and MJF maybe not meant to play a part in MJF's title match at Full Gear, but rather to play a part in the first title defense that he may have at Winter Is Coming against potentially Ethan Page.
Yeah, and they set that up pretty well as far as, the attack on MJF a few weeks back. He hasn't been on TV outside of that podcast interview that was shown on Dynamite this week. And I think when Page put his name in the hat for the tournament, he outright referenced that MJF, really kind of calling him out as his potential opponent at Winter Is Coming, which alludes to Page winning this tournament. So I do think that's kind of what they do here. They have Page win this. And I think, Greg, you made a good argument as to why him facing Mox makes sense. And Reverend Keith, I think on the flip side, another strong argument as to why MJF could come out the winner. And I think that's just good booking in a way. We're kind of all three of us thinking about what could be the outcome here. And not one thing is that obvious, but a lot of these scenarios do make sense.
All right, Reverend Keith, your final question for us tonight.
My final point of the evening is relative to the Elite. Now, I was listening to Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer recently on Wrestling Observer Radio, and they were discussing the potentiality of the Elite coming back to face the Death Triangle. What are your thoughts on the potentiality of that for the Trios Championship, since that was the title they had won before they were suspended?
It makes a ton of sense, and I think I've seen speculation from a lot of people in that direction. As you said, that was the title they had won, before the suspensions hit. It would make sense for them to get an opportunity at that. It seems to be building toward that in terms of what Death Triangle is doing. There is no Trios title match yet announced for Full Gear. I think if you were doing the Elite versus Death Triangle, you'd probably want to announce it last minute just to keep the intrigue going. We've seen the vignettes on AEW TV that sort of reintroducing the Elite to the television audience, preparing them for the group coming back. So it just 2 and 2 equals 4 sometimes, Patrick, and it just feels like that match is the match that's kind of hanging over this show, hasn't been announced yet. And for a lot of people, Zach in Texas, who emailed us, who already loves the card, it's going to be the cherry on top of the sundae if they announce that this week. But I think, there's an argument to be made, announce it beforehand, a couple weeks beforehand, so that, you sell extra tickets if it's not sold out yet. I'm not sure what the numbers are. It may already be sold out. But I like the idea of announcing it last minute. So, you don't have the Elite on TV for 3 weeks before the pay-per-view, so it doesn't feel like old hat. But it feels like, oh my gosh, what are they going to look like? How are they going to wrestle? What are they going to say? That sort of thing by the pay-per-view to find out. So if indeed that is the direction they're going, I think that's smart for them.
Yeah, and it gives your pay-per-view audience something special. I mean, we don't get that much. We get really good cards on pay-per-view, especially on the AEW side, in my opinion, but we don't really see or hear those really special scenarios that happen on pay-per-view as much as we did maybe 20-some years ago. I heard the Wrestling Observer Radio too, Reverend Keith. I was excited to hear that that's the potential, so I've kind of been mentally preparing for this match to happen. And then, Greg, I think on your end of it, I 100% agree. I mean, ideally, you would be building this up a little bit longer than they have the ability to, or that they've done. But I think they have to pull that trigger on, I would say, this coming Dynamite. I wouldn't wait for Rampage to announce this, to really build a final intrigue for something like this. So the other thing here, I don't know if we've mentioned this, but it's really a built-in feud with the Elite really being the first trios champions. And then, you know, for those in the know why they disappeared from TV, but there's probably people out there that really don't know why they're gone. And then, of course, Death Triangle winning those titles the next night. So I think this is a nice built-in feud to really not have to build up weeks upon weeks, where it makes sense to just have them fight for these titles.
All right, Reverend Keith, always a pleasure to hear from you. Hope we hear from you again soon, maybe even next week after Full Gear.
Thank you so much for taking the call. Have a blessed week.
Thanks, you too. All right, well, let's finish out our Full Gear preview. Got a couple more matches to talk about. Chris Jericho defends his ROH championship against Brian Danielson, Sammy Guevara, and Claudio Castagnoli in a four-way match. Jericho trying to denigrate the ROH title and what it means. So here we have two members of the Jericho Appreciation Society in Jericho and Guevara, and two members of the Blackpool Combat Club in Danielson and Claudio, and chaos reigns, I think, Patrick. Which group makes it out of this match still intact is maybe the better question than who wins.
I love that question because I think the beauty of the Blackpool Combat Club is that they are just fighters. So they may fight with one another, but they still will probably come out, a cohesive unit. I think the more likely scenario, I don't see Jericho and Sammy necessarily breaking up. I think that would be too quick in this point, but I do think there being more of a rift between the two, because Jericho cut that promo a few weeks ago, pretty much assuming Sammy would lay down for him if needed and really be at his side. He's just really in the match, according to Jericho, to help Jericho win this thing. So there might be more of a rift on that side. I think this is going to be a fun match. I think it's going to be a heck of a match from an in-ring perspective, but I think it's going to be a fun match just because there's so many scenarios that, you know, having a Claudio versus Danielson one-on-one at some point would, you know, certainly get the crowd going. Having, you know, super heel Sammy that no one seems to like lately nail Jericho from behind or something along those lines, I think would get over as well. So there's a lot here they can play and weave in and out through this match. I think we will see Jericho come out the victor here. I know there's a Ring of Honor pay-per-view in December, so the following month. I would imagine they would like to build that around him as champion. So I think putting him in the four-way here with his title at stake kind of gives them an out booking-wise to maybe pull something underhanded, so to speak, from Jericho, but, you know, his character perspective to come out the victor.
As someone who covers AEW for the Torch, what's been your take on the inclusion of Ring of Honor in AEW television and how it's been presented?
Yeah, great question. It's been frustrating. It's been very frustrating because I want to see it. When and if Ring of Honor has its own show, I'm signed up. I'm ready. I'll be a viewer. The amount of time Ring of Honor takes on any given AEW show is very confusing. I'm sure Tony Khan has his reasonings and he'd make his case as to why he does it, to build brand value, to maybe get some, buy-in from TV outlets potentially to say, you know, there's a brand here that can hold its own. That aside, as a viewer, it's just exhausting. I mean, there's Ring of Honor. I'd love to understand that the last year or so, how much, you know, percentage-wise Ring of Honor has been mentioned or utilized in matches on Dynamite or Rampage. But that aside, it just feels like, you know, 30% is too much, and it feels like it's been at least that much more recently. So I think the one word that I'll walk away to answer your question is really frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're not alone in that, for sure, based on what I've seen online and the co-host that I have and that I ask about that here on Wrestling Night in America, that seems to be the overall tone and tenor of how people are feeling. The tag titles are on the line. The Acclaimed against Swerve in Our Glory. Last time AEW had a pay-per-view, this was the tag team title match, and the Acclaimed came up short. There were people who I think thought that they should have won at that event or maybe even called an audible at that event to give Acclaimed the victory, but they did win it later on. With as deep as the AEW tag team division is, what do you make of them going to – they don't do this very often. They don't repeat matches on pay-per-view very often.
No, you're
what
right.
do you make of them going
yeah.
back to this match with as deep of an AEW bench as the tag team division has?
Yeah, another kind of confusing moment. I think, to me, I think this is really built to finally make the break between Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland. I don't know if you needed to do it on a pay-per-view and have it against the Acclaimed yet again, but you're right on. I mean, AEW does not like to rebook big matches in this short a period of time. So this is really the second pay-per-view in a row, and then sandwiched in the middle was Grand Slam. So it's three big shows back-to-back-to-back that this is going down. Like I said, I think my big takeaway here, the claim will come out the victors. I think it's going to be meant more for Elise Strickland's breakup and storyline to continue from there. But again, why do they need to do this at a pay-per-view? I'm not really sure. I would love to see – I mean, you can pick a handful of tag teams. I think FTR is the most obvious one. I'm not sure they're even going to make the card, which is a shame. But, yeah, I'm not sure how to answer that other than to say I think this is really meant to break up Swerve and Our Glory.
I think it's also going to be hard because fans are going to be expecting quality that we saw at the pay-per-view last time. And I think all four men are talented, but that's tough to live up to. I mean, that was a really good match. And part of it was because it surprised people. I don't think anyone had that as the match of the night going in. And now people are kind of expecting a really, really good match, so the pressure is going to be on. It'll be interesting to see how these wrestlers respond to that. So there's a lot going into this. And you know, you're talking about this is the night of potential turns. It's going to be interesting to see what we get.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about William Regal possibly in the main event. Talk about Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland here. Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. Something happening between the Jericho Appreciation Society or Blackpool Combat Club in that match. You know, you look at those are the ones that jump off the page at me, you know, but MJF maybe turning somewhere there. There's a lot of potential for turns here on this show.
Yeah, it's interesting. This is like not to use the term, but you like puns. This is the turning point potentially, this pay-per-view, to really pivot maybe into 2023. I mean, this is definitely the last pay-per-view of the year for AEW. They have a pretty big gap between now and Revolutions, usually in the February, March timeframe. So, yeah, I mean, this is really could be a setup pay-per-view to really pivot into that new year, which I think is the right thing to do. They don't really have a clear start-stop season, like maybe WrestleMania is often looked at. So I think this could be used as such, to your point, with the, you know, the potential turns and, you know, of course, title changes as well.
We talked at length about Moxley and MJF earlier, so I won't belabor that point. But Full Gear, Saturday night, will be on the air, Wrestling Night in America, PWTorchDailyCast.com, right after Full Gear goes off the air. And I mean right after, within minutes. So have your phone ready to listen in. Have your computer ready to tune in, because we're going on the air quickly, right after Full Gear goes off the air. So if you want to listen, we welcome you. And, of course, call in and participate by emailing wnialivecast@gmail.com. DJ from Miami is up next. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Not much. How are you?
I'm good. I guess we can go into what you guys are talking about, AEW. I feel like going into this, I don't know, it's still crazy. I don't know what they're going to do with CM Punk, but he says he still wants to wrestle, but now there's rumors that some people are saying that they don't want CM Punk back, and they're saying Triple H, you know, don't do it. But I feel like at the end of the day, you know, Colt Cabana is going to come in a live mic and he's with Jericho. He's going to say something and Punk will have nowhere else to go and say his piece, but I just hope he won't come back just for that. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what at the end of the day is really going to happen. I mean, what do you think is going to happen? Buyout or I don't know. It's really strange. They won't. Nobody says anything. It's so quiet. They got dead now.
Yeah, Punk, I don't think, is coming back to AEW. It sounds like all signs, every reporting that I've heard is that AEW is trying to buy him out. It's about coming down to a dollar figure, I'm sure. As for what happens after that, gosh, it's got to be tempting for Triple H, who is a known peacemaker. He's the one who brought Bruno Sammartino back into the fold. It's got to be tempting for Triple H, even for his own ego, to bring CM Punk back. And, you know, CM Punk, I think, in AEW, for the most part, probably had a really good time. He seemed, for much of his run, to be someone who was happy to be there and happy to be in a wrestling ring again. Will he feel the same way about WWE? You know, Vince McMahon is not there. Many of his gripes that he had on the podcast several years ago with Colt Cabana maybe are no longer relevant. I don't think the doctor is still there that he had the issue with. Vince certainly is no longer there. He had the issue with it wasn't so much having the issue with Roman Reigns, but protecting Roman Reigns, and now Roman Reigns is the biggest star in the company. So, I mean, he shouldn't have a problem with that. You know, Ryback isn't there. I know he had a problem with Ryback in that interview. So a lot of the barriers to CM Punk coming to WWE are gone. Not all of them. Triple H, I think, was still someone who got a lot of flack from CM Punk in that Colt Cabana interview. But with Triple H now 100% office, 100% creative, no longer a wrestler, is Punk more open to working for Triple H under those circumstances than he would have been otherwise? So a lot of ifs, you know, and it's going to be a dollar figure, too, that WWE is going to have to meet to get Punk. But I think it is something that would probably be very intriguing to Triple H. And if it's not WWE, it's nowhere. I think WWE is the only option wrestling-wise for Punk, unless he wants to do some Chicago indies for fun or something like that. Patrick.
Yeah,
sorry.
You also.
No,
that's okay. I'm assuming Ring of Honor is also out of the picture. For similar reasons.
Pretty good bet, yes.
Yeah, okay, great. No, I mean, I've heard the same reports as you have, Greg, as far as the buyout, and it seems like that's where they're headed. Until that happens, I'm hopeful that changes, but no indications of that at all. As a standalone fan, that's kind of, I'm just hopeful that things change and they can progress in a more positive way. That said, I think you make a lot of good points as far as him shifting into the WWE world. At some point, I think the Triple H factor is probably the biggest one, and the lack of Vince McMahon. I don't know if you mentioned this, but the doctor also that was in the lawsuit with Punk has also gone from the company, if I have that accurately. And, you know, I think the other factor you mentioned as far as really wanting to be there, I think can be overcome by just by having short-term appearances. So maybe the Brock Lesnar type contract, in other words, where he's really there for a feud and is off TV for a while and comes back on his own accord, you know, later in the year or whatever the case may be. So really just that big event style contract. I think that could easily be overcome, especially if the money's there, which by all circumstances is something that he's certainly interested in. So,
aren't we all?
I think the injury, exactly. I think the injury to Punk has really bought some time here as far as, like, really making that decision final because he's going to be out for some time anyway. That's kind of another reason why I'm personally holding out a little bit more hope that he comes back. But, again, until anything changes in the reporting, it doesn't seem like that's the case.
All right, DJ, we'll come back to you for your second question for us.
My second thing is Austin Fury. I'm just dumbfounded what they're doing. Like, I don't know if he did something or whatever, but this guy has the three checks. He's great, you know, looking. He can talk on the mic, and he's a decent wrestler. I don't know what he did But, like, they even said, this has never been done before. Him cashing in a middleweight championship and losing? What? Like, come on. Like, of all things that, you know, I'm just dumbfounded what they're going to do with him. I mean, are they going to start over making babyface like I asked you a couple weeks ago? And you said, you said something, and I don't know. Like, I was saying I had this weird feeling because the other day when he was doing his matches, he was doing some babyface things. I don't know. At the end of the day, where do you see this kid? He's such a great talent, and just, boom, got buried. I don't know. He had a great future. I don't know where they're going to start over with him. And he's a heel, you know. Some guys are heels, some guys are babyfaces, and he's a great heel.
Yeah. One of the things that we wondered when Vince left and Triple H took over is what would happen to Austin Theory. Because Austin Theory was somewhat of a pet project of Vince McMahon. There were reports that he saw Theory as the next John Cena. Vince spent some of his rare on-camera time with Austin Theory week in and week out on Raw. Theory was a part of the match with Vince and Pat McAfee at WrestleMania. We wondered if the current regime would be as high on him as Vince was. And I think the answer is no. That said, I don't think he's a guy that they're just going to completely throw by the wayside. It was odd to have him cash in on the United States champion. It was odd to have him lose in that manner. But I don't know. I don't think it's the end of the line for Austin Theory. I think he'll get a decent push. I don't think he'll get shunted down the card and be another Ricochet or another Cedric Alexander or anything like that. Patrick, any thoughts on Theory and where WWE may see him his cash-in on the United States champion?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned this about me earlier. I'm not an active WWE fan at the moment or viewer. That said, I do follow and I've heard the news here. It was interesting to hear that. I think, you know, the caller you mentioned three checks against him or really in the pro column, I think Greg talked about the fourth check. It's really the Vince McMahon factor. What was he looked upon or how was he viewed with Vince out of that picture? And this kind of helps answer that, at least at this stage. But I don't know how you book someone to make them purposely look silly and purposely, you know, one, yes, you're right, you know, cashing in for a mid-card title is one thing, but not to win it is just silly booking. We'll see what they do. The famous, you know, just wait and see what happens, I guess could be utilized here, but on the surface, it just sounds pretty absurd.
Yeah. DJ, your final question for us tonight.
My final thing is going what they're doing and why they're doing to certain people. The Bobby thing, it's like, I love Bobby. He's a great heel. Like I always told you, he's a better heel than a face. But it's just like, is he going to go back with MVP, say, hey, you know, it's either, you know, be with me or get beat up, or I don't know. It's just like, at the end of the day, he needs somebody like a JBL talking for him, you know, that's Bobby. But like, there's so many wrestlers that I'm so confused on, like the LA thing, what kind of feud he's going into, like he has a different kind of vibe, like all these guys have a certain vibe, but I don't know why they just don't walk up to Triple H and say, look, this is me. This is what I want. Like, I don't want to flip-flop. I want to be this. And, you know, I don't know what they're doing. I'm confused. Like, you understand what I mean? Like, what do you think that they're doing? Do you think that they're trying to figure this out? Or do you think that they're going to keep on doing this flip-flopping thing at the end of the day? I'm confused.
Well, you mentioned LA Knight, one of the wrestlers you brought up. It looks like he could be in a feud with Bray Wyatt, first of all. Based on their interaction on SmackDown backstage. And, you know, not a bad position for an LA Knight-level guy to be in, not a bad start for Bray Wyatt, sort of a stepping stone for him in his comeback. But I don't know. I guess I don't have as big of a problem with some of what's going on booking-wise in WWE. I don't think it's as hot as it was when Triple H first took over, and maybe we were just all on a high from, you know, going from the bumps in the road of the Vince McMahon weekly booking to what felt like calmer waters of Triple H taking over, as I mix my metaphors up here. But, I don't have that sense that things are going awry WWE booking-wise. I don't know. Patrick, I know you're not a weekly viewer of WWE, but, you know, from what you read, I mean, what's your sense on, you know, some of these characters? Some of it is a lot of new characters have been introduced. There's just kind of a natural trying to find where they're going to settle in on the depth chart type of deal. And so I think that's part of what you're seeing as well, as these guys like the Braun Strowmans and the Dexter Lumises and, those who have, you know, Mia Yim just returned this past week. And so as they come in, you know, there's going to be this natural settling and this movement around of the depth chart as Triple H and creative figure out where they're going to be positioned.
Yeah, it's funny you say this. As you're kind of talking through that timing, the podcast I do with Alex McDonald at The Torch, 90s Passcast, we look at 30 years ago this week in wrestling, following The Torch as our guide. So what we've been doing this year is we're looking at 1992 and the Bill Watts era of WCW. He took over in late spring of 92, and by October, his first full pay-per-view that he owned from start to finish happened. So it took about 5 or 6 months for him to really fully take over and understand kind of what he had on his roster, who and where they fit and slotted in, how he would book his new champion, Ron Simmons, things like that. So maybe not apples to apples, but I think there's a lot you can learn as far as just, the timing it takes to get certain people over, introduce new characters, and do it successfully or do it the right way. And I don't think we've seen that in WWE in some time, as far as just maybe more of a pacing in that regard versus a run-and-gun approach. So I think it might, from that perspective, it sounds like it's just kind of taking that a little bit longer time to finesse its way out, if you want to say that.
All right, DJ, thank you for the phone call this week. Look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Yep.
All right, this Friday night is the Impact Wrestling Overdrive special event from Louisville, Kentucky. The lineup is as follows: Josh Alexander versus Kazarian in an Impact title match. Kazarian, the X Division champion, has chosen option C, forfeited the X Division title in order to get an Impact title shot. Black Taurus against Trey Miguel in X Division Championship Tournament Final. I may have spoiled that one. The tournament may still be ongoing on Impact TV, so I'm we may have to mark that for edit. Heath Slater and Rhino against the major players, Brian Myers and Matt Cardona, for the Impact tag titles. Jessica and Taya versus Savannah Evans and Tasha Steelz for the Knockouts titles. Bully Ray takes on Moose in a tables match, and Mickie James versus Taylor Wilde in a career-threatening match. If Mickie James loses, she must retire. Patrick, I know you don't watch WWE. Not sure what your status for Impact is, but if you got any thoughts on that card, lay them on me.
Yeah, so I don't watch it as much either, but I do try to catch it when I can. I really enjoyed Impact when I do watch it. There's a lot of just super talent on this at this company. Those that you have seen in other promotions, those that are up and coming on independents, and even internationally on New Japan, for example, which I follow pretty closely. So I think on the surface, I'm very tempted to order this this one on Friday night. There's two things that have two guys really on my radar that Impact has going for them. One is the champion, Josh Alexander. I think he's tremendous. I think Frankie Kazarian is somehow 20 years plus into his career is still kind of under the radar. So I think on paper that, some people might not think that's that great of a main event, but I do think they're going to have a heck of a match just with the talent between the two of them. And then the other guy that I just absolutely love is Moose, because he's so unique. I'm not sure I'm personally that excited to see Bully Ray face him, especially in a tables match, but hey, if you're going to throw a gimmick in there, maybe that'll help offset some of the Bully Ray for me. So those are the things that are really driving my interest here. and I think they've done a really good job with this X Division tournament. I have not been able to see every match, but just looking at the brackets on paper, again, it's, you know, the who's who as far as, you know, independent and some international wrestling stars. So I think seeing, you know, the outcome of this, is just a nice, wise thing for them to do as far as just utilizing talent that you don't hear or see on, you know, more major stages.
And, of course, if you guys, listeners out there, check out Impact Overdrive on Friday night. I'll be watching it Friday night, so I'll be tweeting at Greg M. Parks during the show, and you can call in or email on Saturday night. We won't be just talking Full Gear. I'll also be taking Impact Overdrive questions on Wrestling Night in America on Saturday night. I do want to get to a couple stray emails we've had that were kind of left over from last week, as I was not on the show last week. And then we'll get to our final phone call. One of the questions was about Crown Jewel, which happened last Saturday night. This is from Zach in Texas again. He says that Logan Paul-Roman Reigns match was an embarrassment to pro wrestling. Logan Paul shouldn't have been in a title match in the first place. He should not be able to hang with the most protected wrestler in the company for more than 45 seconds, much less get believable near falls. It sure as hell shouldn't take the entire bloodline to help Roman beat this jerk. To top it off, Logan Paul rips off Rob Van Dam's five-star frog splash, give me a break. They just tarnished the credibility of that title and of Roman's endless run by putting on this farce. I don't know how anyone who considers themselves a wrestling fan can find anything good to say about or any redeeming value in this insult to the entire industry and every person who trains and grinds for years to hone their skills. What a joke. So again, that was Zach in Texas, making no bones about the main event of Crown Jewel last weekend. If you were to look at it traditionally, Patrick, it was a good match. Logan Paul is much further along in his wrestling training than he should be at this point. But then there's the argument that Zach make, which was it shouldn't have been a good match. Logan Paul is only three matches into his career. How can you possibly defend a non-wrestler with very little training hanging with the world champion of 2 years for as long as he did, Reigns needing the bloodline to help? So I think we all just kind of go with the idea that, you know, it's fun to see Logan Paul and see how far he's progressed in the ring. For some people who are aware of Logan Paul and into his level of celebrity, it's probably cool to see him in the ring hanging with Roman Reigns. But so I guess I just wonder how many fans there are like Zach out there who truly are disgusted by Logan Paul being allowed to hang that long with Roman Reigns. What's your take on I guess this is more of a celebrity involvement question in general. Because it's not just Logan Paul's Bad Bunny, for as fun as he was and as good as he was, you know, and everybody like that. I mean, is it what should we be expecting from a booking standpoint? Is it okay for someone, does the celebrity sort of, is that a trade-off that you accept? That you'll, the celebrity sort of gives them superpowers and allows them to compete at a level that most other people shouldn't be able to compete with someone like Roman Reigns. And I mean, let's say Logan Paul is not just some, you know, schlub. I mean, he's obviously in great condition. He's an athlete. So it's not like he's, you know, just some Joe Schmo who's been sitting on the couch for 20 years making videos. Sure. He is an athlete, and you can see that the way he's trained and things like that. So let's give him just a little credit there too.
Yeah, and I watched his WrestleMania match against The Miz this year, and I was really impressed. I mean, I'm not a fan of him in any way, in or outside the ring, but I came away impressed. That said, I'm twofold here, because on the one side, the wrestling fan in me says I'm with Zach 100%. No business being in there as far as what I want to see in my wrestling, who I want to see in my wrestling. Why would someone of that caliber, meaning not a wrestler, put up a defense against a good offense against a champion that you've been building for, you tell me, Zach, or excuse me, Greg, how long he's been champion, but for over a year at this point, more than that.
Over
2 years
now.
On the other side of the coin, I understand. Yeah, okay, yep. On the other side of the coin, I totally understand the business side of it. I mean, this is not new. This is WrestleMania 1, you know, go back to that and other instances in wrestling where celebrity has always been a big-time moneymaker and, you know, attendance maker, revenue driver, publicity driver. And that's something that is not new to this business or WWF, WWE at all. So I understand that. It's never something that I've been interested in personally, but I kind of, you know, you have to take, I'll call it lumps. You have to take your lumps, you know, the good and the bad. I don't understand the booking aspect of it. I think maybe the way they've done it, at this show had to do with the stage they were on, being Saudi Arabia, giving them something of value from a celebrity perspective more than you would see on a typical pay-per-view show. That's all I could say about it. I mean, I get it. I don't like it, but it's not new. It's not new to the business. It's not, certainly not new to this company.
Yeah. All right, and our final email question is, I think has been answered by what's happened in the week since Brian sent this. This is Brian. He says, what do you think War Games is, Team Bobby versus Team Brock and Team Roman versus Team Logan? Or is War Games Team Raw versus Team SmackDown? I don't recall them specifying yesterday and have worked all day today. Have a great week. So in the week sense, it appears that War Games is going to be a women's War Games match with Damage Control against you know, the Bianca Belair group, and then also the Bloodline versus the Brawling Brutes and Drew McIntyre. Are those appropriate teams, do you think, or would you have liked to have seen, with this being the first War Games on the WWE level? You know, we've seen it in NXT before, but this is the first War Games for the main roster. Do you think there is another grouping that you would have liked to have seen take a part in War Games? Because I look at, you know, I think the Bloodline makes a lot of sense to be in it. It saves you from having to find Roman Reigns an opponent for Survivor Series. You could put him in this multi-man match. I thought from a star power point of view, New Day, and I know they just lost again to the Usos on TV, but I thought New Day being involved in that match, maybe instead of the Brawling Brutes, would have been, from a star power point of view, a little stronger.
Yeah, I would agree with you as far as New Day for sure, and just kind of just the value, the maybe the lopsidedness of the face versus heel team, to your point. That said, you know, in the email, the emailer mentioned the potential of Raw versus SmackDown. I wanted to kind of talk about that a little bit, just bring that up. I'm so happy that they're not going down that road. It feels like a decade plus since they've been doing that, so definitely something new. In a good positive way that the WWE is not doing here at this pay-per-view. It really doesn't really make sense to do that the way they've kind of blended the two shows the last, you know, little bit anyway. But no, I'm all in favor of this. I think you make another good point, Greg, as far as it being a way to get a prominent showing for Roman on this pay-per-view in a big setting and not have to set up a title match because – you know, by all accounts, he'll be the champ for a good amount longer. So kind of extending that reign in a way that doesn't really have to blow a feud or elongate a feud more than necessary, I think, is a positive here. So it could even be a way for the heels to lose and the Bloodline to lose in a match that makes the face team or whoever is the sole survivor on that side in this scenario. Come out looking stronger and build up a feud down the road with Roman or anyone on that side, on the Bloodline side. So I think there's a lot of positives here. And the one thing I have seen the NXT versions of these, the few they've done, I'm hoping they book this a little bit differently. I came away from those thinking they were very similarly booked, generally speaking. So I'm hoping there's something new that they come up with this time around on the WWE side of things.
Yeah, if you wanted to do, you mentioned, you know, using this as a springboard for a potential opponent for Roman Reigns and Sheamus is someone who's gotten a lot of positive feedback ever since his matches with Gunther. And so, you know, this could be an opportunity for them, whether it's at the Royal Rumble. I don't think Reigns is probably going to be at the December pay-per-view, but if you wanted to do something at the Royal Rumble, you know, certainly you could do worse than Sheamus versus Roman Reigns there. So they could use this to kind of springboard Sheamus up to that level a little more. Final phone call is the 813 area code. I believe this is Jeremy from Tampa.
Hey, fellas, how are you doing today? I got a question for you, and I'm just kind of catching the wind of it now. MJF is in the new Von Erichs movie. Is this coming to, like, Netflix or the movie theater?
I think this is the movie theater. I think it's, like, a major movie. Patrick, I don't know if you've caught wind of the Von Erichs movie and you know, it came out, I think, this week that MJF was going to have a role in it, and maybe that's why he's been off TV for a little while. But I do believe it is going to be a major motion picture, and that's going to be very interesting because the Von Erichs are a very interesting family. And, you know, I sometimes think, you know, if Hollywood was aware of a lot of the stories from professional wrestling, that it would just make you,
yeah.
You could make a gold mine, like telling the stories to an audience that knows nothing about professional wrestling, because it is so interesting. Even to people who don't care about wrestling, these stories are just fascinating. I mean, the Von Erichs story, that family story could be relevant and could be, I don't want to say entertaining because it's very tragic, but in a movie type of way, in a dramatic type of way, could be very entertaining for even a general audience who knows nothing about the Von Erichs or professional wrestling. So I do think it is going to be a major motion picture. Patrick, I don't know if you have any more details on it.
No, I was intrigued by that too. I actually Googled that recently thinking I just assumed it was going to be on streaming, but I think you're right, Greg. I think it's going to be a major motion picture. And to your point, I mean, my wife is not a wrestling fan at all, but we were watching Von Erichs Dark Side of the Ring when it was out a few years ago, and she was super interested in the story. And the more, you know, I'm not laughing in a positive way, just interesting, the more tragedy, the more in tune she was with the story, just because it was just such an unreal scenario. And I think to your point, yeah, this could be, you know, wrestling stories could be a new movie genre, really. I mean, because there's, like you said, there's so many. You know, that those even our longtime fans probably never heard. So,
yeah, I'm trying to. I've watched the first three episodes of Tales from the Territories, which is the new Vice TV show. On and I watched. They were the first two were on Memphis. One was on Kaufman and Lawler, and the other was on the AWA. And I mean, you could just pull. Do a movie on a territory. Like, I mean, you could do a period piece on any of these territories, the crazy stuff that happened, the crazy characters. I mean, you could really explore that if you wanted to. So it's wild. Jeremy, anything else for us tonight?
Oh, yes. Another question I have is, and I thought the draft was in fall. Did they push it back or still on the back burner to a later date?
I have not heard anything. I wrote a column a couple weeks ago looking at the results from last year, and I mentioned in my column, in fact, how there has been no announcement of a draft for this year, and we don't really know what the status is, if they're going to do one. And I don't know if that's a philosophical belief of Triple H. I don't know if it's because he's kind of blurred the lines between wrestlers on Raw and wrestlers on SmackDown. I don't know if it's because the influx of new talent, maybe he wants to establish them before he drafts them. I don't know. But, that's one that was always a guaranteed ratings grabber, which makes you think they'd want to do it for that reason alone. Patrick, I have not heard anything about a draft. But I feel also like if you're going to continue to have wrestlers cross brands the way they've had, and it hasn't been as bad as it was at its worst over the years. But if you're going to continue to have wrestlers cross brands the way they tend to do these days, having a draft doesn't make much sense. I mean, you've got to want to stick to the rules in order to have one.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. I've always thought, too, if you're going to do it, you know, why do it now, you know, pre-WrestleMania? I mean, I know that's months away. But a post-WrestleMania draft timing always seemed a little bit more logical to me, especially if they're really, you know, unofficial slash official start to the new year is right after WrestleMania. So if they're going to do it, maybe we see it later. Maybe it's more logically placed at that point, in the year.
It's more logically placed there, but for television, they always like doing it in the fall because they like to kick off the new fall season. And we've already had the new fall season episodes, and there was nothing on the draft. So I don't know. That doesn't bode well, I don't think, for the draft. Anything else, Jeremy, for us tonight?
Yeah, it was in 1988. Me and DJ went to go see to James L. Knight Center in Miami, and the main event was Greg the Hammer Valentine and Brutus Beefcake versus the British Bulldogs. You know, I got grounded for 2 weeks because DJ decided to throw ice at Greg the Hammer Valentine, and Greg the Hammer Valentine screamed at us. He said, "You effing kids!" On that note, I'll leave it that be. But he got me in trouble for 2 weeks for doing that.
Of course, DJ will say his piece and will probably defend himself the next time he calls in. We'll allow for that the next time he calls in. Jeremy, good to hear from you tonight. Thanks for calling.
Hey, good night. Stay safe, fellas.
All right. You
Thank
too.
You.
All right, Patrick, that's it for us tonight. Really appreciate you coming on tonight to give your expertise when it comes to AEW for Full Gear. I'll give you a moment before we bid you adieu to plug your work for the Torch.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Greg. Always a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to you the next time, hopefully. So for the Torch, there's two things. Every week I can be found on the Torch reporting on AEW Rampage every Friday evening. And then also dropping Friday usually is the podcast that is also on the Torch that Alex McDonald and I do. It's called 90s Passcast. Like I mentioned earlier, it's a look back around the same week and time that we record 30 years. We follow the Torch issues, so all Wade, his reporting, and all the staff, we really follow the ongoing storylines and stories in the business. We try to stay in the moment, so we try not to do too many spoilers and get ahead of ourselves, which is easily broken. Our rules broken pretty quickly, but Alex and I have a super fun time, so please catch us at that podcast.
All right, Patrick, appreciate you coming on, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Greg.
And don't forget, we're back here next Saturday night, November 19th, after Full Gear, taking your questions, comments, concerns about Full Gear and Impact's Overdrive Impact Plus event on Friday night. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. Look forward to talking to you next week because, well, next week if it's Saturday, it's Wrestling Night in America.